This episode of FilmSack is brought to you in part by Audible. Go to audiblepodcast.com/FilmSack and get a free audiobook download today. And that contest we've been telling you about, you know, where you get to help pick the movie that we're going to cover on a live episode of FilmSack at Nerdtacular 2011. Well, it's up. You can go enter now. The address is filmsack.com/N11.
Hey, what are you laughing at, lard ass?
I'll tell you what. You turn around and walk out that door, and I'll forget what you said. And I won't tell everybody that you drink horse piss.
I guess I'm not too smart, that's all. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Additional support for this episode comes to us from Lori A. Kearney. This episode is for you. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack episode whatnot. 73 is what this episode is. I'm Scott Johnson, and this is the podcast that mines the very depths of film entertainment for all mankind and womankind. You know, we're equal opportunity, gender, non-specific people. Welcome back to the show, everybody. My name is Scott Johnson. Joining me tonight, Brian Clyde Dunaway.
Let's see, you know, a little checklist for today of what I did today. Let's say I went to work, grind some gears, got off work, kiss some ladies, drink beer, bogart some peanuts, get into a fight over said peanuts, go home to Ma's, drink some more beer, get into a fight again, but this time with a monkey in a barn. It was a good day. I didn't even have to use my AK.
You kissed the receptionist, don't forget.
I kissed the receptionist, and I tried to get busy. I tried to get busy with another girl in another room.
Yeah.
But she wasn't having it.
She wasn't having any. All while Eddie Rabbit serenaded you. Also with us today, Randy Black Widow Jordan.
Oh, aloha, Scott. Brian. To celebrate this week's film, I decided to be to see what it would be like to be a bare knuckles back alley side bet fighter in North Hollywood, Jackson, Wyoming, and Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I learned the keys to success. Number one, only eat clam chowder. Number two, only drink beer. Number three, never train or work out or lift weights. Wait, those are the keys to dying at age 45. I'll get back to you.
Or sooner if you're drinking and driving like they all did in this movie.
Yeah. Yes.
Holy crap, that just, I don't know why it shocked me.
Not drinking and driving, drinking while driving.
Yeah. Not even open container in the car, like just slurping it down the whole time. Different time, folks, different time. Yeah. Rounding us out today, we have Brian Orville Ibbett.
So our main character is a hard-drinking, woman-chasing, fist-fighting animal lover. Well, except that he keeps his pet orangutan in a pitch-black shed out back and feeds it stolen bar peanuts.
Now, people will probably already know what we're talking about. We're talking about the film called Every Which Way But Loose. I almost said any. Every Which Way But Loose. One of the longest titles, I think, in movies I've ever seen. Now, I saw this when I was younger. Don't remember much of it at all. So I really needed Scott Fletcher to explain. And he did. Here it is.
Every Which Way But Loose. Philo Beto, played by Clint Eastwood, is an easygoing trucker and a great fistfighter, with two friends, Orville, who promotes prize fights for him, and Clyde, the orangutan he won on a bet. He roams the San Fernando Valley in search of cold beer, country music, and the occasional punch-up. When Philo falls hard for sexy country singer Lynn Halsey Taylor, played by Sandra Locke, he sets out to win her over.
Girlfriend, okay. Sandra Locke, by the way.
Okay, roams the San Fernando Valley. That's not the right description for this movie.
I would agree. They're in the desert a bunch. They're in Colorado, clearly. Yeah. They're in places that have nothing to do with San Fernando Valley.
Yeah, that was odd.
Isn't that weird? Also, he didn't win the monkey in a bet. Sorry, the ape. Right. The ape in the bet. He won right. it in a fight. Yeah.
The orangutan, thank you.
Orangutan?
Yeah.
The Dr. Zaius in the film. There's a little controversy I dug up about this. So the monkey, Clyde, the orangutan,
yes, sure.
Uranutan, whatever.
Orangutan.
He was mistreated, apparently, by his trainer throughout filming of this and also during.
That's why he was shooting all the birds. That makes sense.
Flipping the bird off at his trainer, not anyone else. that guy recently got nailed to the wall with some PETA lawsuit and got in huge trouble for it. And there's recent, semi-recent news about this guy. So thought that was semi-interesting, but not really.
It isn't.
I don't remember the movie at all. Like I saw it when I was younger. I would have been 8 years old when it came out. And this was the year of Superman, which I remember very well. But I don't remember 1978's Any Which Way But Loose very well, other than there was an ape in it. Clint Eastwood was in it, and that's as far as I remember.
And no, you have to remember the line, right turn, Clyde.
Oh, I mean, right.
You have to remember that.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. I do, but only in a weird kind of tangential way. Like friends will say it. Mm-hmm. Like when people heard, got wind we were going to do this for the show, I would hear people say, mm-hmm. Turn right, Clyde. I'm oh, Punch. Yeah, that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was a drive-in movie. I remember seeing this at the drive-in with my mom and my uncle. For some reason, and that was the only thing I remembered from the movie too, was the orangutan and the miming shooting him. He puts his hands up, and then you go bang, and he falls down on the
stump. Right on the stump there,
tires, whatever.
Looked painful to me.
It did look painful. See,
yep. That's why. That's why you remember those things. But it's on the whole, to me, it's just kind of an obscure film that seemed like it came from a whole different time, and I didn't realize this, but. Clint was 49 when he filmed this.
Wow.
Yeah. Totally threw me off. I heard that and went, what? So I did some math and sure enough, 49 years old.
Your math is always quite funny.
No, you should definitely verify my math.
From one show to the next, there's always a math bit. We need a little bumper to play. Scott does math.
The way I figured it, he was born, let's see. I just see if I you guys double check it.
He was born in 1930, right. And this film was clearly filmed during the summer of 78. So he was probably
clearly
48 would be how I'd
48.
How I'd
calculate I'm thinking more of when the movie came out, but yeah, he was 49 minus 1 year for production. That is correct. But that just, I don't know, that throws me for a spin a little bit. Like, he doesn't look that old. He looks kind of badass and awesome.
He looks incredible for his age in this movie.
Yeah, if I look like that when I'm 49, hella freaking Lulia. Pretty happy about that. he looks great now. Dude, I'm sorry, let me back up. If I look that good at 80, how awesome will that be? He looks great right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Still working.
Well, it's all that clean living.
Yeah, it is actually. He's a pretty clean living dude.
Yeah.
He worked with this lady that played the singer. And they were partners for years and years and years, did a bunch of films together and were never married, but they were totally, romantically inclined to one another. Mm-hmm. And now she is not doing that with him anymore. She does something else. and hasn't. She hasn't done much since 2000, I want to say.
Yeah.
Yes, for the Where Are They Now segment, she is now doing something else.
I thought Scott was going to totally fill us in on what she was doing.
Nope.
She's doing something else.
I would if I could. She's not doing anything.
No.
She's literally not doing anything. Like I can say that she's a
her last title was she was in something called The Prophet's Game. She was the adult. Mm. That was her
credit?
Yeah.
Holy adult.
There was a big gap. There was a big gap before that. I mean, there was a thing she did in 1999 called Clean and Arrow, but before that it was like nothing from 1986 to 1999.
Wow.
Except for Rat Boy.
Rat Boy. Mm-hmm.
But she was part of Sudden Impact, The Outlaw Josie Wales, stuff she did with him.
Man, I'm finding it hard to believe that Clint Eastwood is now 80.
Yeah, dude.
That is weird.
And he's great. Yeah. Like you hear him on
Gran Torino, man.
Interview lately. He's just awesome. Still just rocking it. That guy's great. And what I love about him is as tough and vengeful as he is in a lot of roles, and even in this one where he's, you know, he's a much softer guy, but he's still a tough guy, right? Like he's still just rocking everybody with those stone fists and weird physique. By the way, I think of him as having the transition physique between the kind of Tarzan of the 40s and then later the Chuck Heston kind of weird barrel chest days.
Yeah.
And he's not quite that, but he's also not quite what we consider leading man physique now. He's like in this weird transition period.
Yeah, I agree.
Cool to look at though. In this film, I thought he's always looking for an excuse to get his shirt off and whatnot.
Yeah, like I thought the guy that played Tank Murdock, you know, the legendary old fighter who he has to face by the end of the movie, I thought that guy was totally wrong for the part.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually thought it would be kind of cool if they'd had Clint Eastwood play both parts, like slick his hair back, right?
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Like, Because he really does look like – he looks more like the legendary fighter than sort of the scrappy truck driver.
And what impact, would work with that is I wouldn't even question it. This movie has an orangutan in it.
Well, okay. So, Brian, you bring up a point, or it reminds me to mention this, that this movie seemed to have about 12 or 15 plot points had no real connection to each other. Yeah. And it's really weird because – and I'll just get it out up front. I really enjoyed myself. Like, I thought this was a lot of fun. I thought it held up pretty good. I thought I didn't feel like an ancient movie to me. I liked the acting. I thought it was funny. There were moments where I was kind of laughing at that. Was pretty good. But then I would go, well, wait, what's really going on? And I realized nothing's going on. Like this gang, nothing. This weird ass gang that's like made up of 58-year-old dudes.
You could get their ass kicked. Not by Clint Eastwood.
Right.
Everybody.
Right.
Can't defeat anyone.
Okay, so first plot point that makes no sense whatsoever, and I need an explanation of it. The first time they are in the Palomino Club, he gets some dentures and puts them in some soup and runs a woman out. Why? What was that?
Doesn't everybody go to a country western bar to eat the clam chowder?
Because
in North Hollywood.
Yeah. Right. This movie was made for the working man, and that little pissy girl down from, you know, USC, she had that crap coming. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's what I call it.
But tell me at that moment you
she
weren't
got
thinking,
her comeuppance.
Tell me at that moment you weren't thinking about the Dukes of Hazzard.
A little bit.
Oh, yeah. Just well, this fits bit. Into that whole kind of stick it to the man genre, like take this job and shove it and convoy to some.
Oh, totally. I had convoy flashbacks. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was in that kind
of. Not in a good way.
No. Not like my normal Wait, good flashbacks.
What would be a good way with convoy?
Well, Chris, did those two ever do anything? I always wondered if those two ever did anything meaningful in a film together. Clint Eastwood and Chris Christopherson.
Yeah.
It would have been a hell of a mashup, I thought, to have a sort of action movie with those two.
Eastwood should have been in Payback. Remember the Mel Gibson film where William Devane and Chris Christopherson and so forth?
Yeah. Yeah, he should have been the detective or something. That would have been great.
I love that movie. That's my favorite Mel Gibson movie of all of them.
That's an easy call, too.
Yeah, I like
that's
that one a lot. It's really good. So the basics of the film, we have a director by the name of James Fargo, did a ton of stunt work previous to this. In fact, if you look at his stunt listing, or is him that did all the stunt stuff? Hold on, I may be wrong on him. I take it back. Wrong guy. It was the sequel director who had all the stunt work. But this is a guy who did a lot of work with Eastwood. And what I started to find as I went on and on with this, he directed him in The Enforcer, for example, and a bunch of other stuff. He eventually went on to a bunch of TV stuff, including two episodes of Beverly Hills 90210 in the 90s. Sky High.
Where Brandon Walsh decides he's going to have an orangutan sidekick and becomes a fist fighter in Beverly Hills.
Always.
That was such a great episode.
Bunch of episodes of Hunter, Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Scarecrow and Mrs. King.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that stuff.
They had no Scarecrows in that show.
No, but it had Tron in it, though. Tron was
That's true.
Yeah, I like Tron. So anyway, I'm thinking of the dude that did the director. I got on a weird, you know, we do this sometimes in IMDb. You'll start with just a tiny piece of some link. And then before you know it, you have done a breadcrumb trail to hell and back.
Yeah.
And you've just looked at every possible weird connection and thing. And that's kind of what I ended up with. And I found out that most of the cast in this thing, like really most of them
were paid in dollar bills.
Well, yeah, but they were all in other westerns and stuff with Clint Eastwood. Like this is a Entourage film to me, you know.
Totally,
and he's got his girlfriend who makes movies with him. He's got, you know.
Well, he was kind of out of the scripts league when it was pitched, so it's kind of like
Well, I think
that'd be awesome.
I think everybody was out of the script league. Really. I enjoyed Jeffrey Lewis, and I kept thinking this film was made for him. You know, in his elastic face. You know,
I love him. I could watch him in anything. Great. He's great. I was really happy to see his face and go, oh yeah, I love that guy. So that was kind of cool. The script was originally intended for Burt Reynolds, so that fits. it seems like it fits. But I was reading that Eastwood, who was being coached by a lot of his people not to take the role and not to pursue the production because it didn't fit his thing, his look, his normal films, that kind of stuff. And it doesn't. There's no question that that's true. But what they didn't realize is that this would be the second highest grossing film of that year behind Superman only.
Yeah.
Which is pretty good, which, you know, brought the sequel along. And
there's no way anyone could have expected that.
Oh,
there's no way you can look at this film and expect that it would do well.
No. It had star power and a monkey. And an orangutan. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
let's see. This is the third of six movies made by real life couples at the time anyway, Clint Eastwood and Sandra Locke. So they made six films together.
Wow.
This one probably sent her off the edge and that was it. She is a breast cancer survivor, though, so good on her for that.
Oh, good for her.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
I don't know why I threw that little bit in there, but sure, why not?
Because we needed to know.
I thought
it'll make me feel bad about saying anything horrible about it.
Exactly. Yeah, I know.
All right. Well,
all right, I'm done.
All right. But I kind of thought that might come up. Let's, in the context of the day, is she good looking? Yes, she's good looking. But her acting and that singing made me want to run for the hills.
Yeah. She's not a professional singer.
No, I don't think that was really, was that really her singing, or was, I know it was dubbed, but was it her singing a dubbed version? Anybody
Maybe.
Know?
They could, she keep looking though, whoever did
I would say probably so. It wasn't that fantastic of a job. They just kept it short. It's kind of like the typical movie thing where they kind of just only give you like two or three bars and it's like, oh, okay.
I honestly thought that was her singing.
It might be.
I really did.
Yeah. It might be. It was bad though. So if it was her, then.
But I mean. Sorry, I'm stuttering here because I'm thinking of Mel Tillis. Mel Tillis, everybody they brought up on that stage was bad.
Yeah.
There wasn't, Charlie Rich was
Charlie
bad.
Charlie Rich, yes.
He was.
Everybody had epic collars, though.
They were band.
Oh, man. Hang glider around their neck.
So wait, who's the one that sang about, help me, is this Charlie Rich that sang the one about, when I come home, I'll wake you up in bed and we'll make love?
Yeah, that was his.
Yes.
Yeah.
My wife was sitting here watching that with me, laughing her head off. She's like, when was that song ever an acceptable form of art? I'm like, I don't know.
It hit number three. It was a huge success the next year.
Really?
Yeah.
I know the Eddie Rabbit thing did all right. Mm-hmm. Like, that was a successful song by his measure.
Yeah. What was the name of that song again? What was that one called? The Eddie Rabbit song?
I'm trying to remember. I think it was every...
I think it was in the chorus, wasn't it? He said it maybe once in the chorus. I can't remember.
They mentioned it once or twice.
Add this to the list of films that we want where there's a song that's eponymous on the front. That's like, we want every film to be like... Imagine that if the Matrix started with The Matrix! You know, like every film.
Well, you're Convoy. So that's another Convoy connection. Convoy does that. But what else? Yep. We've seen others like this, like
Troll 2. Hey, everybody, Millbot. Troll 2.
Filmed in Utah. Troll 2. this movie. I'll save that for later because that's part of the email.
I think
Never
it's
mind.
Funny that Scott just started to ask for other films that do that, and I'm sure in the back of his brain. He realized, oh God, don't let them start singing Flash Gordon.
No, let's just move on.
But that's the most recent perfect example of that. Holy cow.
Or even this.
Django!
Remember that? Got some news about that.
You forgot the title of the movie. Yeah. We're going to put it here.
We got some, we got some news about that coming up, so stay tuned for the end of the show. People have been blasting us with information about a recent happening, so we'll talk about that later. What else? Let's see. All the actors. No, you don't really know any of these people. We mentioned Jeffrey Lewis. We mentioned Beverly D'Angelo. That's Mrs. Clark Griswold.
That's right.
Yeah, I love that.
Clint Eastwood and Sandra Locke. But everybody else, kind of, man, I don't know who these people are. And they're from a different time. Like, half these people were born in the 1800s, and they don't have... They really were. Their names aren't on the, you know, like IMDb has no sign or hair of their face. Like, there's no photos.
But you know them by face. I mean, you recognize them because there's, you know, very prominent character actors that we see all the time. Mm-hmm. On this.
Like Ruth Gordon.
Ruth Gordon, yeah. I was going to say she was really good in, what's that old movie? Oh, crap.
Rosemary's Baby?
No, we haven't seen that one yet, or I haven't. It's before the, it's just after or before this. Crap, let me look real quick. Not Columbo, not The Love Boat.
Taxi?
No.
TV series.
Jules the Love Boat?
Not My Bodyguard. Oh my gosh, we got to watch that. No. It's something else, and I can't remember the name.
Oh, I forgot about The Big Bus.
Harold and Maude.
The Big Bus.
She's amazing. The Big Bus. She's amazing in Harold and Maude, if you
haven't seen it. Oh, yeah, she's Maude. Yeah, right.
Great in that.
Oh, that's
such
right.
a great movie.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That movie
really holds up. Hey, nothing after 1987. What gives?
She died. Died in 85.
What gives? Yeah, nothing died after 1987. But
look at her birth date, 1896.
Yeah.
God, dude, that Old West was still happening. Crazy to me. Anyway,
her father was a sea captain.
Of course, she's pretty badass.
Old dog.
She is that generation's Cloris Leachman. Mm. What she reminds me of. I don't know if that's a compliment though. I don't know what that means. But anyway, a lot of these people really old, really really old, and you don't really know who they are. And Clint's like, I think he's one of the last ones alive from this cast. Jeffrey Lewis is still kicking. And who played the head of the gangs, the Black Widow gang? Who was that?
Yeah, see, he's been a lot of famous stuff. Character.
Love that guy.
Too. Yes.
Terrible role, but his name. I don't know his name.
Oh, you love that guy?
Yeah,
you
love how he's,
yeah.
I love him, not in this, but I love him generally. Like, he's just
like
great.
A chubby Gene Hackman. I mean, doesn't he give off a little bit of a Gene Hackman vibe?
That's a good point.
Oh, you're talking about John Quaid.
Is that the guy's name?
Oh, no. He looked like... He looked like a character from Harry Potter. Oh crap!
Chola was his name in the show. Yeah.
Oh, you mean One-Eyed Willie?
But look at all
in the Harry Potter movie.
No, he looks like you're thinking of Brendan Gleeson. Different.
Mad-Eye Moody.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. This Quaid looks just like.
He looks like Gleeson. Absolutely.
Oh, you know, 20 years older.
Absolutely. Yep. He totally. In fact, that's what I kept saying. And Kim's like, "Well, that's not him. Obviously, he's 78." I'm like, "I know. In fact, he's dead, isn't he?" Yeah, he died in 09.
Yeah.
He's only 71, though. I was young compared to some of them there.
If for some reason we make some stupid deal with the devil and watch Any Which Way You Can for Film Sacrifice, see him again.
Oh, he's in it again? Oh, my gosh. What are these guys doing? They just need to not make that sequel. I mean, that means I keep saying it, but I had a good time. I had fun with this. I didn't mind it as a film. I already mentioned some of that stuff. So let's see. Oh, what's with the, this is a weird, this question seems maybe a little trivial, but I could not get past the fact that they just used good old fashioned, no frills, basic Helvetica fonts for everything in the credits.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Was that a thing to do back then?
It was ridiculous.
Totally.
Nobody did that, did they? Because I saw that and went, oh. Typesetting freaking 101 here, and they weren't even big fonts. They were just like.
I realized that Superman and Star Wars were science fiction films, but still, you didn't have to be doing something for the kids to go put a good font or put some nice colors.
Anything.
Just weird.
Anything. It was just like typewritten, sans serif font, like boom, Any Which Way But Liz. All right, let's get this moving. Right.
Yeah, exactly. I was fine with it.
It threw me off. My typology teachers would have. Throwing a rod or typography.
At least it wasn't Comic Sans.
I like the idea that you took typography for years and years. All these teachers.
I took typography 1 and 2 in college, and they were weird classes. And so you got so focused on fonts, you couldn't unsee weird font usage. You'd be driving around town going, "What the hell's that building think they're doing with that crazy font?" Anyway, it's a good class. All right, let's see. There's something. Okay. This is a little self-serving here, but there's something about this movie that I couldn't quite put my finger on the entire time, and I still don't really know what it is. I have a feeling it's the Eddie Rabbit song, but I could be wrong. There's something that reminds me of my dad, time with my dad.
Yeah.
Growing up. And I don't know if it's like the era. Maybe it's the era. I was 8 years old, but maybe it's like.
Did your dad ever drive you around in a mid-size hauler truck and
kinda,
get
yeah.
out and fight people?
Well, it's when my dad owned arcades, so he didn't fight anybody, but we were constantly dropping like a Pac-Man off at the arcade downtown and then driving all the way out to Roy and dropping one off something out there, changing money in one of the other ones in a Pizza Hut. So like the whole Saturday I'd go with him and we'd just travel up and down the valley and then sometimes, you know, parts of Nevada or wherever he had these machines, and we were constantly getting quarters out of the machines or fixing them or putting new transformers in or new board or whatever, or hauling an actual
words,
machine out. So I think I think I did do a lot
in other
of
words, you were Clyde.
Exactly.
That's right. That's right. His dad would stop into Shakey's Pizza and give the receptionist a kiss, like hold her face steady and give her a kiss.
He'd steal me some peanuts.
Shakey's had a receptionist. That was the best part of that story.
That's why that place isn't around anymore, because you know, it's a lot, you know, too much of a loss on all the extraneous positions. That
yeah, this receptionist, they had a janitor, they had a CFO. Wow.
Assistant to the janitor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. I think that's probably what it is, though. There was just a kind of a travel-y road trip quality to the relationship I had with my dad.
This film played really hard and loose with geography and time.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You know, like right. Sometimes we're out camping for weeks, and other times we get from Taos to Jackson, Wyoming in a minute.
Yep. Lots of Colorado stuff there, Ibbot.
Lots of it. I had that in my notes to talk about that. A big fight scene takes place in historic Georgetown, and as they're, you know, as he's running down the street, as Jeffrey, what's his face,
Oswald or
Orville,
destroying motorcycles.
My buddy Scott's candy shop can be seen right there on the corner in the background.
Oh, cool!
Very cool.
Is it still there?
Today. It's still there. Actually, it wasn't a candy shop back then. I think it actually was a candy factory back then, but when they bought it, they turned it into a store, a retail store.
A house of ill repute.
The place still looks exactly the same.
Weird.
I just found it weird because they go from one place to the next pretty quickly in that part of the film, and suddenly they're in Santa Fe. And it looks exactly, I mean, it doesn't look, you know, like where they should be, you know, like, I don't know. It just, they're not giving you any explanation.
Yeah.
They're just jumping
around.
There was a
bit of that. No, I'm sorry. There was a lot of that. Like, that's my whole point with the plots. Like, I don't know, this movie wasn't really about one thing at all. And it was always like, now we'll take a break from trying to get the monkey laid at the local zoo and get another fight with people.
How effortless did that seem? Like, oh, you know, these things are meant to keep animals inside. But holy cow, it's like, it, you know, wasn't even ruffled that he had to climb into a zoo.
No. Yeah. But you know what? What cracks me up is that it's totally the kind of planning you make it at 4 o'clock in the morning after you've been drinking all night. You come home and have an epiphany. That's my God. We need to get Clyde laid.
After Let's a 12 pack of Olympia beer.
Yep.
Olympia beer, that's, man. That was like, product placement
yeah.
of that was, any movie? Because that was
that
like.
That was so long after you ran off and let Clyde drive a street sweeper off the side of a building. Like, hey, I think you'd get Clyde taken away from you, actually.
Yeah. I think walking around town with it would get it taken away, wouldn't it? I don't think you can do that.
Well, the cops do nothing. There's only like two cops in town. They both took sick leave so they could go get Clyde.
They keep calling in sick. They have to go find a payphone because it's the 70s to call in sick and tell their boss. And who's the sheriff's boss? I don't know. But
That was a weird. They were living in their own little microcosm of lawless open beer drinking driving.
I can't make it in today. I got hit by a fish.
People get hit by fish. There's a monkey someplace. Yeah.
What was up? By the way, speaking of that, what was up with Clint Eastwood, Philo, doing a Tarzan roar when he hit the one black guy?
Oh, dude, I had a Return of the Jedi moment when that happened.
Yeah. Right.
It's like, did they just do what I think they did?
They did.
Don't do that.
It seems so
don't
out
ever
of
do
place.
That.
It seems so dumb.
Late 78. That seems like exactly that time.
I mean, I got the joke when he squared off with those gang dudes in that town and they did that. That was great, right? Like, it's it's a throwback. It's a nod to Clint Eastwood's other work. And
The Bad and the Ugly, right.
Yeah. But the other?
Yeah.
Tarzan.
That's the scene they're going to use, you know, as part of his Lifetime Achievement Award acceptance you know, film clips they show on the Oscars.
You think we'll ever watch that Greystoke's version or whatever the hell it was called? The one with
Yeah,
the one with Ray in it? Yeah.
Yeah.
We should see that.
Totally. If for no other reason than to listen to them overdub Andy McDowell's voice with Glenn Close.
Oh, my gosh. I forgot about that. Oh, we should totally see that.
We should.
All right. Getting on the list.
Wait. We're talking about Glenn Close was in the animated one.
No.
Ray Stoke, The Legend of Tarzan, the live action one.
Yeah.
With Andy
with
McDowell.
Raiden and Andy McDowell in it.
That's right. Highlander.
You know who you're thinking of? The animated one is what's her name from
Glenn Close is the voice of Kala in the animated Tarzan movie.
Oh, really?
And it's weird that you're saying Andy McDowell, who kind of has the same voice as Minnie Driver, who's the other voice.
Yeah.
And maybe I should watch some Tarzan movies. I'm confused.
You're right. Glenn Close is in that. Huh. Weird. That maybe I've got her wrong. Maybe that isn't her. Hold on here. Tarzan.
Kala.
She's been in two Tarzans?
That's weird.
Tarzan. Hold on. Tarzan 2. Oh, my gosh. Wait, that's the sequel to the anime. You're right. Greystoke, Legend of Tarzan, Lord of the Apes. Weird. She's the voice of Miss Jane Porter. Weird.
The uncredited voice of Jane.
We so need to see this.
They didn't want Andy McDowell going, so you're Tarzan, huh? Well, this is awesome. This is really nice.
Well, I didn't know Glenn Close could do like a super authentic British accent. I had no idea.
What?
That's news.
I remember when Greystoke came out. I've never seen that film.
Oh, man. You owe it to yourself. It's
really?
Raiden.
You got to see Dangerous Liaisons if you don't think Glenn Close can pull off a British accent.
I thought I'd seen. Oh, no. You know what? I haven't seen that. That's why, maybe. That's the one with what's his name?
John Malkovich.
Yeah. I haven't seen
and
that.
And a very naked Uma Thurman.
Ooh.
I'm in.
I'm in. I'm all in.
Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah.
Bring that really,
on.
Let's do that. Maybe we should see that one sometime. Let's watch all these movies.
speaking of boobies, this film came dangerously close to boobies.
Mm-hmm. Yes, no reason.
Yeah, for no reason. And it invoked the Louis C.K. rule, right? Which is, if you want people to laugh, you're not supposed to show them naked females, but you can show naked males.
Yeah, always. Yeah. Well, we got a little side bum of Clint.
Mm-hmm.
A little Clint.
Oh,
bum.
And of Sandra Locke, too.
Oh, that's true.
That strip club they were in, by the way, is Kitty's Arcade, which you can find on Colfax right next to the Crazy Horse Lounge, which is still there.
Wow.
It's down from the Ogden Theater. So when you go to see a concert at the Ogden Theater, you frequently have to stand in line in front of Kitty's, and you see the people going in and out of Kitty's with their brown bags and their trench coats.
Nice.
speaking of businesses, did you catch the scene in Santa Fe where they're inside the Mexican restaurant?
Yeah.
And did you look at the table?
No, I saw a bunch of food there, but
it was completely covered with food. They had put food on every square inch of that table, and there were three people sitting there. There was Clint Eastwood, Jeffrey Lewis, and Beverly D'Angelo, and there was enough food on this little table for 17 people.
Yeah, I think you mentioned it. There was a lot.
I think that's supposed to be a plot point behind that, but I'm not sure. What.
The 15th plot point, right?
That's right. Well, you know. Clint Eastwood is a universal soldier, and he needs to constantly eat to keep up.
Well, they even commented on it. He's like, eat up.
That's why he keeps taking his shirt off to stay cool. He's getting too warm.
That explains all the bar fights with peanut people and stuff. It's just like Universal Soldier.
When does somebody taking a couple of peanuts out of a bowl of free peanuts cause a fight? Ever.
Oh, I know.
Has that ever happened in all of humanity?
No.
There's so many other things you could do to another way you could write it to make the fight a little bit more believable, but hey, put those peanuts back. You're taking them up to your tree, you squirrel.
What? Like, really?
Right.
Everybody thought
how
it was
drunk
funny
are
too.
You, dude?
There, was it too cliche to have Clint slip a little bit and drop some beer on the dude? Like, was that too cliche? Was that
the guy bumps into Clint and he splashes a little beer on this guy? Hey!
That would have worked. That would have worked a little bit better. I still can't. Can we just, I'm sorry to go back, but Greystoke? Is that the one where Tarzan, is the one where you could only kill him if they cut his head off, or am I mixing my movies?
There can be only one Tarzan.
All right. Good evening, everyone, and a moment to talk to you about Audible. Audible.com, once again sponsoring the show. Our good friends in Audible, always stepping it up to sponsor FilmSack. And, yeah, you know, I love the audiobooks. Can't get enough of them. Also like TV. So right now, I kind of like both. I'm really into Game of Thrones on HBO. And the book that show is based on, or books, are available on audible.com. For example, The Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, Book 1, available now, narrated by Roy Dotrice. Of course, the classic George R. R. Martin story. The best books have authors with multiple initials in their name. Have you noticed that? Anyway, you should check that out. That's available now. You can get it for free even. Go to audiblepodcast.com/filmsack and get that booger for free. Great book for free. Free is good. Free is good. Oh, Grease, I know what it was. He got all the good guys to fight in the tournament so that Outworld couldn't... Oh, that, I got it. I see how it is. All right, anyway, can't quite get over that Glenn Close thing, but that's for another show. Let's do a trope. Is anyone's mom really like that lady? Like,
no.
That stereotype exists in every film where there's an old cranky lady, but I've never actually met someone like that.
Yeah.
That's just pissed and won't go get her stuff done, and she doesn't wear her glasses, and she's never going to get her license again, and she's got a shotgun and get off my porch. And not only that, a shotgun that has motorcycle seeking missiles in it.
That's right. She could be pointing it any direction.
Like explosive.
Every which way, but at the motorcycle.
Yeah. She got explosive rounds, and I just know Randy was having a freaking stroke with how many times she was shooting without reloading.
Oh, yeah, Randy, there's your bullet moment. Do you have any thoughts
I was actually kind of spacing out there. I am not going to analyze carefully the ordinance in every film we watch. I'm sorry.
We want that to happen. We want you to go, oh, a gun was fired. That must have been a auger fepa-bepa-ba, and that's not proper or whatever. I would love that. That should be your thing. Not willing to do that?
It's just, I don't know. It was just like in this film, no. No. Here's the thing. I actually was analyzing. I watched the UFC last night and then Every Which Way But Loose.
The UFC?
Oh, really?
And that really put the film on its ear. Like watching all these close-up fist fights after watching the UFC.
Close-up fist fights, yeah. You mean actors punching at the camera?
Yeah.
Oh, God, there was so much of that.
Yeah, it was like that old Nintendo game, dude.
This film had an actual scene where a guy holding a guitar beats the crap out of a dude using the guitar as a weapon. I mean, hits him hard.
Yeah.
And keeps on playing. That's right.
I love that, yeah.
It's not all fake fighting in this film.
No, there's some moments, but a lot of the head bobbing got a little out of control. My wife goes, yeah. Oh, they're all bobbleheads. I said, what do you mean? She goes, every time anybody gets hit, they bob their head for 5 minutes and walk right. backwards. Yeah, she's just like, that gets a little old. But that first person view is hilarious.
You have to imagine them filming and saying, okay, Sandra Locke, now you're mad at Clint Eastwood, but this camera is Clint Eastwood. So beat the crap out of this camera.
Put a little picture of his face on it.
She didn't look mad, though. She looked psychotic.
Yeah, she looked crazy.
It was really frightening.
Yeah, yeah. You know how I like to, this doesn't happen very often, I like it when an old movie we've seen on FilmSack seems like it may have been ripped off for a new one. I think this film was ripped off and a couple of very key points by Over the Top that we saw with what's his name. Totally. So, and I'm talking about like the hat turning backwards bit.
Yeah, yeah, constantly
lifted. I mean, it wasn't the same character for sure, but you know, the main character. But when he would turn that hat around, it was like go time. Well, every time what's his name Lewis did it, I just went, dude, freaking Sylvester Stallone stole your idea.
Yeah, yeah, I like that.
Plus, he's just traveling around. He's a truck driver guy. He's, you know, dubious background. Gets in a fight. Mm-hmm. Fights everybody. I feel like Sly was sitting around going, oh, this movie's like pretty good.
I was still, a perceived underdog.
We should steal this idea, make your own movie.
All right, give me a trope alert.
All right, hold on. Burp.
You travel all over 50,000 square miles in the United States and you only run into the same 18 people in every town? Yeah. How is that possible?
I didn't even notice that. You're right. They were everywhere.
It was awesome. And the fact that Clint Eastwood run into the girl like while he was running down. Only time he actually did any physical exercise in this movie, and he runs into the girl.
Including the very last scene. Very last scene, there's only three cars on the highway, and they contain three different groups of all of the people in the movie.
Yeah, let's have a little rolling cast of characters come by as we end this movie.
By the way, there's another trope in that last scene that I hate.
Is it a ding dong diddly?
Ding dong diddly.
What do you got?
It's ending any story with people all laughing at themselves.
Oh God, yes.
No, it's the Scooby Doo method, right? That's what you do.
Right. Yeah. They should freeze frame on them and then roll the credits, like as they're laughing, yeah. And then have the credits roll up.
Yeah.
Mid laugh.
That's the last time they ever seen Bo and Luke Duke.
Yeah, but you know what? That's actually a trope in TV I wish would come back. I love the Bo and Luke Duke yeah. narrator guy that would freeze frame everything and talk about stuff. Love that. Why doesn't that happen more?
Yeah, that's a good question. The Police Squad TV show did it right, where they'd actually have it looked like a freeze frame, but they'd stop and people would be walking in the backgrounds
and see barely moving and stuff.
That's right.
Like in Troll 2. When they were walking around that table. Remember that?
Right.
Always comes back to Troll 2.
Gotta pee on the cookies.
The singing lady, the girlfriend of Clint Eastwood, can be completely kicked off American Idol in seconds within her act. She actually, the actress left this quote, which made me wonder why maybe her and Clint aren't together anymore. The quote is this: "I am a romantic. I want to cry when I throw out my Christmas tree. I have a lot of feelings about magic and fantasy. I believe in elves and giants. I believe that fairy tales are nothing more than news reports of what once happened."
Wow.
Crazy lady.
So she's basically Tracy Morgan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except job, not as funny and
faster.
Right. Dude, he was, oh my gosh, he had me laughing.
I want to cry when I throw out my Christmas tree, Liz Lemon.
By the way, there's something caught in my throat, and I want to save our poor listeners from going to our blog to talk about this.
Oh.
That that narrator in Dukes of Hazzard was Waylon Jennings.
Yeah.
And he's dead.
Yeah.
And so with the film, you know, the film with Johnny Knoxville and Sean Jack William Cass. Scott.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That was Junior Brown
that
did that and did a really passable impression of Waylon Jennings.
I ain't seen that movie. Never saw it.
Not bad.
Yeah. You guys already know how I feel about the Beverly Hillbillies remake, which I really liked.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll like
it. You know what's even sadder than that? The follow-up to that, Dukes of Hazzard, which had nobody of any interest at all, was actually even better.
Really? Yeah. Tell me Coy and Vance were in it.
I wish.
No, it was called Dukes of Hazzard: The Beginning.
Yeah.
And
can't name someone from that film.
I can't either, but it was all right.
I want to see it now. Dukes of Hazzard: The Beginning. Oh, there it is. The Beginning in 2007.
And guess who did the Waylon Jennings part in that one? Actually, I can name one person from that movie because he's perfect for it.
Hold on, I'm gonna look.
Our old friend Gary Cole.
Mm. Oh, really?
Was Lumberg from Office Space?
Right.
He's the narrator.
Was Willie Nelson was he Uncle Jesse in both these movies?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Wow, we've named two other country singers who weren't at all affiliated with this Every Which Way But Loose, who didn't make a cameo appearance.
I'll tell you what, Willie Nelson made the Palomino Club, so to say he wasn't, I'm sure if you freeze framed enough of this movie, you'd see a picture of Willie Nelson somewhere in that
He's
film.
Out there smoking pot in the background, probably
avoiding taxes. Ripping up 1040s.
He's 3 years younger than Clint Eastwood.
Oh, I take it all back. I can name another person from the beginning, from Dukes of Hazzard: The Beginning. Harland Williams, one of my favorite comedians.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
He was Roscoe in this movie.
Oh, no way. Okay. I'll see it. Now, I think I want to see that first and then the Johnny Knoxville one, because now it's like chronological, right?
No, see them in order. See the Johnny Knoxville one and then see the direct-to-video
I want to
one.
See the one where Enos goes to L.A. to work for the LAPD.
I love that.
And freaking Cletus takes over and freaking Coy and Vance are in charge. That's the one I want to see. It's not going to happen.
Yeah. Those are dark period in entertainment.
Let's see. What else? That's all I had in my notes, really. Any other things of note before we get to sound files? Anything?
Oh, there's so many tropes in this movie.
Give me some tropes. What do you guys got?
I'll tell you, I don't know if it's as much a trope as just a travesty that bikers, they always lose their power and they lose their bikes. And this happens all the time in every movie we've ever seen.
Yep.
Somebody's always hurting these bikers' bikes. What's up?
Well, these guys were the worst gang ever. I mean, they were really the worst gang. They're all grandparents, basically. They all have, you know, disgustingly stupid outfits and costumes. Couple of guys were muscle bound and tough looking, but the guy with the really bad hair and the kind of half bald thing going, the just really ugly dude, he belongs in no one's gang.
The leader who wears a white scarf and and a captain's hat and
like, what gang is that? The 70s had better gangs than this, right? Didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Did no one here see?
I mean, you know.
Escape from New York.
Like Warriors, even.
The Warriors, yeah. Right.
At least that had some kind of hardcore gang in it.
Yeah.
This is just, this may as well be, this is like West Side Story 50 years later.
Oh, but you got to admit, you got to love their intro music. Every time they came on screen, they were the only group that had their own music.
Doo-wop, right?
Yeah. Doo-wop.
Yeah, that was stupid.
All right, here's a trope. In the movies, if you're driving a large passenger vehicle, you can successfully chase down guys on motorcycles.
Yes. Yes. What? And had that nice little sweet kind of quiet country tune playing while they did it.
Yeah. And in real life, the motorcycle pulls a U-turn, then a left, then a right, and you're gone.
Yep.
You know?
Yep.
In this movie, they get out in a big dirt field and go around in circles.
Yeah.
In a driving range, a golf driving range.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? Another trope.
Yeah. Beep. Oh, you want another trope about golf driving?
No, that was it. Yeah.
The golf. There's always some golfer or golf. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What the hell? There's always golfers smacking balls, and people are always messing up their day with the golf. Yeah. Yep. Oh my gosh, that's a great one. I can't believe it didn't even kick in until Brian said it. Mm. That's funny.
Crazy.
Were there any montages in this movie? No.
No, not really.
Not montages.
I don't remember.
There were a lot of examples of inexorably being committed to something in this film. Yeah. Like once you start something that you shouldn't do, instead of just doing something else, you're like, oh, well, now that I've driven a few inches into this car wash, I have to continue with the entire thing.
Oh, no, the spinning brush. I have no possible way of escaping that.
Yeah. I did like listening to those two give crap to the dude who actually got beat up. Yeah. That was pretty funny. That whole conversation in that tiny living room where all the gang members are all piled in there. That was
I expected the main leader's mom to come out any minute and say, you guys want cookies?
You want cookies? Mom, leave us alone. We're trying to have a meeting.
Who wants Hot Pockets?
I'll make you some sandwiches. Did you guys catch that the one biker with the Viking helmet on, when he came out of the car wash, his horns were turned down?
Oh, yes.
I didn't notice that.
His horns were limp and downward for like the next three or four shots he was in, and then they went back to normal.
While they were wet and he was depressed.
Yeah.
Yeah, the horns went normal.
It was like a cartoon.
His horns went flaccid.
Nobody wants flaccid horns. Yeah, so they hung out in that house until someone burst into the room and said,
"This is my house."
Ah, troll callback.
Nice.
That felt nicely good. Done. That felt really good. All right. Well, let's do some clips. Got some clips.
Got some.
Let's get started with these here. We got I just did a little part of the song I like so much.
Every which way but loose, you turn me. Every which way but loose.
There is something about that song I love. I don't know what it is.
Don't you think that a good modern editor could cut 20 minutes out of this movie?
Oh yeah, of course.
You cut more than that.
Yeah.
I'll bet they're remaking it. They're going to remake it. But this time it'll have Colin Farrell in it, and instead of an ape, it'll be like a little spider monkey or something, a little more agile.
Sorry, it'll be Colin Quinn, and
could be. You never know. Colin Farrell's lined up to be every remake this year.
Have you guys seen Colin Quinn's new show?
No, he has one.
No.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute, I haven't seen it.
I thought he died in a remote control accident back in the 80s. No.
Okay, let's try again. Have you seen Norm MacDonald's new show?
Nobody he looks 150 years old.
I know.
What is up with that? I don't like that at all.
He's got drinking issues.
Well, yeah, but here, hold on.
All right.
But are any of them good?
Yeah. Yeah, they're all good.
The Norm MacDonald one's good?
Yeah,
sports show. Yeah.
I'm looking at pictures of him here on the image database here on the Google, right? Mm-hmm. And he's kind of just a cool party looking handsome dude for who he is, right?
Yeah.
On his show, he looks like Ghost Man. He looks really old. Like, it's not even I'm not just exaggerating. It seems like he's even kind of having mid stroke with his talking.
You had to come off Norm there a little bit. And while we're down there alone there, yeah.
While we're on this subject, have any of you seen Talkin' Funny yet?
No.
No.
The new HBO comedy special. It's
so Randy, what have you been doing this week? Maybe watching some
watching
TV?
A lot of comedy, yeah.
So wait a minute, that's the Ricky Gervais, Jerry Seinfeld sit down, yes. Louis C.K., that thing, yeah.
Yes.
I want to see that.
So good.
Yeah, I heard.
In fact, like the day after it aired, Ricky Gervais said on his blog that he thinks they're going to have to make some more of those.
Yeah. Well, didn't he produce it? I think it was him. Didn't he have like had a hand in that? I think he's kind of like the John Favreau of the five at the table thing. It's kind of like that deal.
Yeah.
Like, that was really good. I recommend everybody. Well, I'm sorry. If you're easily offended by X-rated material, spoken word, you don't want to watch this, but otherwise.
Wow. Really? Even, even from Jerry Seinfeld, he usually doesn't work as blue.
They
as
actually much. Have a long discussion about how the three, it's like a 3-on-1 where Jerry Seinfeld doesn't, and they talk about the last time Jerry Seinfeld had the F word in his act and all that. It's very interesting.
Huh? Yeah. I would totally want to see it. I totally want to see it. It's just one show, one episode.
Yep. Yeah. 1 hour.
All right. Thanks, HBO.
Hey, it's kind of smoky in here. You guys want to go out and have some sex?
I know. What a great pickup line.
And it worked.
There's a trope, by the way. There is a huge trope throughout this film.
Huge that women, trope.
Women are so easy.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
They're unless they're college students.
Yeah. The college students don't want nothing to do with you unless you can light their cigarette.
That's right, baby.
Just, light you can walk cigarette. Up to a woman and plant a kiss on her if you just know her by first name. Mm-hmm. You can easily ask a woman to go have sex with you. You just got to kind of couch it in some environmental terms. It's just amazing how easy they all are.
Well, yeah. I went ahead and captured the bar fight, and I want you guys to listen carefully for what is a clear overdub of a person in the scene, which I also captured separately. But this is the peanut fight. And this guy is one of my favorite bits of crazy in the whole film. So here it is.
Hey, put him back.
You talking to me?
This ain't the Salvation Army. Hey, listen, put him back.
I got plenty of peanuts, Big Al.
You mean these?
Yeah, asshole. Unless you're taking them to your tree.
Oh, shit. Excuse me, gents.
The squirrel's taking his peanuts up to his tree. This squirrel's ripping off peanuts, ain't you, squirrel?
Love it.
Yeah.
And you know, hey, you're taking it up to your tree.
And that other guy's like, oh, that's my sign to get out of here.
Right.
I just didn't know that could start fights. The four of us say worse things to one another when we're, in a good mood.
Have you ever been to a bar with peanuts? I mean, those things get bogarted.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't touch them.
I wouldn't either.
Gross.
Oh, really?
Oh,
There's this bar I really liked in Honolulu where they served the steamed peanuts.
Mm.
That's even worse.
Oh, it's great. No, it's great.
Now they're moist. I don't want people touching my moist nuts.
They all taste like, Kim loves, Kim's a big fan of the boiled peanuts. She comes from that part of the world where that's a big thing. But just having them on a table in a bowl in a bar at 3 a.m. or whatever. Well, I guess it was the day when he went, but just that idea, because grosses me out. I don't want to touch those nuts.
It's sealed food. I mean, you're not eating the outside. You're cracking it open.
That's true.
Not
it's
me.
It's not like pretzels where people do handle every single pretzel as they're trying to get a handful.
Yeah.
Brian Dunaway goes to the bar with some gloves and a surgical mask.
A black light. Oh, don't touch that bowl.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. But you guys heard the dub, right? This bit.
You talking to me? You talking to me?
That's not him.
You talking to me?
That's not him.
That's the black guy who hangs out with the other guy. It doesn't sound like a white guy at all. It's weird. Like,
oh, Clint's mic cut out and he won't come back for reshoots. What do we do? Have Tyrone do it.
You talking to me?
You talking to me? Are you? Well, say.
Picking up the ladies. Here is him trying to pick up that chick who does not want anything to do with him.
Hi. My name's Philo. You don't mind if I sit here for a while, do you?
Suit yourself.
I don't recall seeing you around here.
I've never been here before.
Where do you go when you're not here?
My name is Carol. I go to USC. I major in sociology. And I'm here because I'm doing a paper on the country-western mentality.
That just
blew 5 minutes of our conversation.
Well, you asked if you could sit. Didn't say nothing about talking.
Who are you mad at?
I don't suppose you have a light, do you?
No, I don't smoke.
Excuse me. What a raunch. But here's the thing. If he's 49, what's she, like 22?
Yeah, totally. Right. But isn't that a really good... I thought the dialogue in that part was really good, though. I was like, wow, this is really good writing.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That kind of stuff was great. I loved it. I thought dialogue and acting was good.
5 minutes of my conversation. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
It was good. Nothing wrong with that. Mm. The Black Widows, or as they say it, the Black Widows.
Widows.
This is him explaining what that is.
Do you know that more people die from Black Widows and Rattlers every year?
Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, listen, I sure do appreciate knowing that, because... most of the people I know just step on them and squish them.
I don't mean this cheap shit. Orville, that's no way to thank two guys just pulling us a beer.
I like that whole bit.
That was a really good scene, too.
I don't know why. I just feel compelled to correct him that, you know, Black Widows are not particularly poisonous or deadly.
Well, they're not, but also listen to the first part of the conversation, and I'll pause it.
Do you know that more people die from Black Widows and Rattlers every year?
Than what?
Right. No, he's saying then just every year more people die, and then more people die the next year.
Oh.
And it's like, and see, it's like a stupid way to say that they're dangerous.
Yeah. Well, say, you know,
is there another gang called the Rattlers that we need to be worried about? why bring those guys up?
Yeah, no doubt. Don't Man, if this was the modern day, it'd be all by I'd be all on my droid looking on Snopes to see if that was true.
Yeah. By the way, my 16-month-old has a Rattler, and I've stepped on it in the middle of the night, and that would kill you if you don't have good balance.
Yeah. No, if you're not, you're going to slip and fall down them stairs on kid toys. No question. Mm-hmm. We used to get Black Widows all the time in our basement when I was growing up, and no one ever got bit, but we were sufficiently terrified, you know.
Oh yeah.
That they'd kill you. But
oh, absolutely. Yeah.
I think that's mostly the name.
Is that what it is?
It's just the name that gets you.
All right. Who knows?
Black Death.
What Clyde needs to do to meet a lady is the name of our next clip. Don't really remember it, but I know the monkey's involved, so here it is.
All right, Clyde, you're going to meet a lady now. Understand? I want you to handle it. That means no spitting, pissing, farting, or picking your ass. You hear me? If you do, I'll throttle you. I understand.
All right. I want to thank Clint Eastwood for giving me this new clip so I can play it whenever I want.
It's like he's trying to start a car.
He's giving him a noogie in the car or something.
You know what? He's probably treating that orangutan better than the handler. Oh,
yeah.
Totally. Love it. I was actually reading in that deal with the PETA thing that he is known in Hollywood for being super careful and like thoughtful and stuff about animals and how they're treated on sets where he's involved.
Yeah.
And so it was just kind of added irony that he didn't really know what the methods of the other dude were. Because apparently there's now videotape of this guy beating the crap out of Clyde.
Really?
Just pounding on this poor monkey.
So speaking of videotape, have you guys seen those videos online of like man versus beast?
No.
Like man versus beast, where it's like a sumo wrestler versus an orangutan and then a gymnast versus an orangutan.
Oh, what? Well, no.
Racing ones too, right? Where somebody guy who's trying to run faster than a giraffe, or am I thinking of something else?
Wait, man you're telling beast. Me you're telling me there is a sumo wrestler fighting an orangutan on the internet and I don't know about this yet.
It's actually a tug of war and the orangutan kicks his ass. It's not even a contest.
Well, duh.
Well, wait, man versus animal?
Man versus Beast is a series of videos. They're all over YouTube.
Okay, is this a TV show or something, or is this something? That
I don't know. I know about them is that they're a series of videos where you get to see orangutans beat the crap out of humans. They're so much stronger and so much more agile than humans.
Yeah? Wow! So I'm now looking at a 32-year-old, 5'10" sumo wrestler at 363 pounds. This has got to be the one. All right, I'm saving that for later.
This used to be a Fox. This used to be a series on Fox, apparently.
That's exactly what it was. It was a Fox.
Of course it was on Fox.
Of course. Where else would this be? Oh, my gosh. He just creamed the guy.
Yep. Tug of War is not about weight.
It's all about having one arm as strong as 50 dudes, because that's what that monkey right there's got. Holy crap, Dr. Zaius. Well, I don't know that a sumo would be my first choice, though. I know there's a low center of gravity there, but I think I'd have gotten like a UFC guy or somebody.
Oh, right. Yeah. You would have gotten
somebody can plant their feet really, like, who knows how to plant their feet really well.
Yeah, because this guy just plants his butt.
Arm wrestler who drinks motor oil.
Right. We've seen him.
Nice.
We've seen him in that ripoff movie. What do we have? We have a weird lady scream. Want to hear that?
Of course.
Here it is. This goes along with, I mean, honestly, Clint Eastwood movies maybe are full of these. I don't know, because that terrible one we have with the guy getting
right from
in the leg or whatever happened there.
Yep. Dirty Harry.
That guy. Well, this lady gets told that that Mrs. Griswold has the clap, and she runs away making this sound right here. And scene.
Nice it's a job. New one to add to the Film Sack Scream collection.
But did everybody come up with their own idea of what he told her?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was kind of wishing they wouldn't tell, but they ended up telling us.
Oh, the clap part? Yeah, it was anticlimactic, yeah.
Right. At the time, though, when he first leaned in, you know, like you were thinking, what in the world did he say?
Yeah, you wanted a Tarantino briefcase moment there. Right. Like, we don't want to really know what's in there.
MacGuffin.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Don't tell us what she said. And Sam, when she told her, and then Griswold's like, oh, and bats her eyes at it. I'm thinking, dude, he told her you had the clap and now he's picking up on you. This sleazy stranger with his hat on sideways. She really just bought.
By the way, if you hire a young woman to sell fruit for you and she just leaves with the first guy who comes along and asks her to go camping, you are not paying enough. Yeah.
I love that. Walk Away Now, says this next clip.
Hey, what are you laughing at, lard ass?
I'll tell you what. You turn around and walk out that door, and I'll forget what you said. And I won't tell everybody that you drink horse piss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that one.
Yeah, that was this other completely separate diner with completely separate people that our gang just happened to bump
into. Gets beaten up. I mean, did y'all not feel like that sometimes? Some of the side stories were like the two cops. It was like they were in a totally different movie. And just every once in a while, they kind of crossed over.
Intersect. They would intersect with this movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then.
Yep, yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I did like Tank, whatever his name was there. Going out in the parking lot and, you know, at 5'6", 260 pounds, completely square. That was a square human being.
Yeah.
And nobody ever knows to fight simultaneously. It's always like, all right, well, you go. Oh, you
take
got
your
knocked
turn.
Down.
It's take your turn. Yeah. We all learned this in grade school. You wait.
He looked
for
like
your chance to get hit.
He looked like like Super Meat Boy is what that guy looked like.
He is as tall as he is wide.
Yeah.
And by the way, how old? I didn't look it up. How old do you think Tank was when this film was shot? I don't know.
38.
No.
No.
I'm guessing he's pushing 60 something. Yeah.
60 something.
Don't you think? Great. No. Maybe
we're talking about an actor named Walter Barnes.
He was born in 1918. How's that?
That is so he was 60, exactly 60.
Wow. Really?
Walter Barnes.
Kind of impressed. Mm-hmm. He died in some time there.
He died later on that year, 1998.
Well, that's not bad. He lived almost 80. So
that's just crazy, though, that you're a 60-year-old actor and they come to you and say, yeah, we want you to play the best fighter in the West. And you're like, I can do that.
It kind of makes sense. Yeah, it kind of makes sense, though. I mean, I don't know. This movie made sense to me.
The idea that he's some rough and tumble dude, that it's mostly in people's heads that Tank is as good as he is. Like, it's just
a
legend.
Legend.
Yeah, the legend is greater than the man.
He hasn't had a fight in like 20 years.
My bigger problem was it just kind of happened. It's like, all right, we're done with plot point 12. Let's move on to 13, which is time to fight Tank. It just, you know, there was no lead up to it, really.
Once again, you would have such a different outlook on this if you had watched Randy Couture get knocked out by Lyoto Machida last night.
Yeah,
because Couture's 47 years old. And he's just like, it's a miracle that he can
he can even stand.
That he looks so great and is, you know, one of the greatest fighters in the world, but against a great 32-year-old fighter, he just didn't really, no one really thought he had a chance. And like the idea that at 60, you're even relevant,
right,
as a fighter. That's just stupid.
Well, I like Clint Eastwood breaking down age barriers. He still does that in my mind, so I'll be all right with it. But what'd you say? What was the other guy that you said that got fought in UFC? Lolito Machida, what'd you say? What was his name?
Lyoto Machida.
It sounds like a place I would really like takeout.
I know.
Like
Lyoto Machida.
Oh, dude. That sounds really good right now. I haven't eaten, so there you have that.
And now on What's Scott Having for Dinner?
All right, we're going to finish out the clips with the terrible song that What's Her Name sings. This is her just making me sick, and I'll play it for you now.
Just to rest my head on a lonely bed and to dream alone.
Yuck. Okay. Gross.
Yeah.
Did not like her that much at all.
I didn't like her. I was shocked to find out how young she was. She that blows my mind.
Skinny.
Totally. But she has some nice legs.
Yeah, she had great legs.
Yeah, in the bowling alley.
She was skinny.
Bad.
Skinny.
Yeah. Knobby knees.
I bet Ibbitt's favorite part was the bowling alley part.
Oh, excuse me.
I love the bowling alley.
Every bowling alley scene I see in a movie, I think of Brian Ibbitt.
Oh.
Because you're such a bowler. He's a bowler. Big time bowler.
Really?
Yeah,
I was going to say, Brian, what's your high score?
Yeah, my high score is 218.
That's not bad. I would
call myself a big time bowler.
That's not bad.
That is not bad.
But you're in a league. You have shirts.
Double I can make.
Yes.
You have the shirts. You're basically the Big Lebowski in my life.
That's I'm impressed. That's great.
That is good. It's way harder than what
my average. Yeah, that's my high game. My average is hovering about the mid 150s. So that's
about my high game. 150.
I miss bowling so much. That was what everybody, my friends and I all bowled every day in college, and then I broke my arm and everything changed.
I think we're going to try to do a little bowling at Nerdtacular.
You lost your career, your bowling career. You were so.
No, I'm just saying, I never got, and I was never able to bowl as well.
could have been the kingpin.
No.
we're talking about a little bowling at Nerdtacular, maybe Saturday or something in the day. That'll be fun. Ibbitt, you're in charge.
All right.
Let's do these awards now. This is our chance to give some awards to this film, and the following awards were granted by the Academy last night. Here are the envelopes. Best Getting Your Pet Monkey Laid Award goes to this film. Biggest Waste of a Gang Award goes to that stupid freaking Black Widow gang. Black Widow gang. The Let's Have 12 Plots Running at Once and Still Enjoy This Movie Award goes to this movie. Star Trek Award goes to Roy Jensen, what played Cloud Williams on the original series.
Yep.
I love original series actors. So.
Has Jeffrey Lewis never been in Star Trek?
Couldn't find him.
Yeah, I didn't see him.
You know what? Same thought, though. I went into that going, oh, he looks like a Cardassian or at least like
Federation.
Yeah. You know what he looks like? A guy. A
Ferengi.
Or maybe a Federation guy who is way out on some outpost, some colony, who's now they're disenfranchised and they want to break off on their own and they've started some kind of revolt. That looks like that guy.
Right.
Let's see. Dr. Zaius Award goes to Clyde. The Best Obvious Pane of Glass in Front of a Snake Award goes to that dude that fell down and looked at a rattler in the face. Saw the reflection in that. It was terrible.
Yeah, they didn't clean the glass very well.
Nope. And then finally, the Collars So Wide You Could Fly Award goes to everybody in the bars and the singers and the whatnot. Let's see here. I would give the soundtrack an A. I love the soundtrack.
Oh, I didn't love it.
Oh, man, you and I are always on opposite sides.
I'm not a big country music fan, but I got to admit, I did like the soundtrack.
Really?
Nostalgic something going on there. I don't know. Can't quite put my finger on it. See, I didn't love the Convoy one. There's something about this, and it's a lot more, I don't know, there's an easygoing something.
Exactly. It's not just country, it's easy listening country.
That's
the worst country for me.
Light country.
Yeah.
I don't mind it. That was fun, so I'm giving it an A for what it is and for when it happened. Let's do a Twitter post, shall we? This is where you three sum up the film in 140 characters or less what you think of this film. Let's start with Randy. Randy, what do you have?
Every which way but loose. Here's a tip. If someone ever comes up behind you with a gun while you're fishing, all you have to do in that moment is hook a trophy fish.
Yeah.
The more you know.
Bling. Nice work, Mr. Brian Dunaway.
Oh, every which way but loose, proving you don't have to have a collective IQ of more than 70 to be awesome, which the movie was. Now, excuse me while I rub my Black Widow belly tattoo.
Nice. And then finally, Mr. Ribbit.
Every Which Way But Loose, a slow, meandering romp through the American West with a shaggy, haggard ape and his pet orangutan.
Ba-dum-bum.
Can I give you my alternate?
Yes.
Clint Eastwood at 48 looks younger than Sandra Locke at 31. His secret, don't get dirty or hairy.
Yeah. Nice. That's pretty good.
Very good.
Well, there you go. Our second
that dude could rock some sideburns.
He really, oh my gosh, could he ever? Mm-hmm.
Did you notice he was perfectly smooth below the chin? Like there wasn't a hair on his body every time he took a shirt off.
And this is about the time when he would start to squint and it would really do that head thing that he's known for. I love that. How all those lines come down to a point between his eyes. I love that. Makes him easy to draw too, by the way.
Yeah.
All right. Well, here's what I learned. While you, at the average age of 50, joined the worst biker gang of all time. Remind me to put a light in that old shutout back. There could be apes in there.
I know. What?
He was all surprised that he got attacked. It was like Kato. It was like a freaking Pink Panther movie in there.
Right.
Yeah.
When you're trying to pick up the ladies, make sure you use the old nasty dentures and the soup trick.
Mm-hmm.
After seeing the Black Widows, I think I will take 80s teenager biker gangs any day.
Absolutely.
And that's what I learned. Well, you join that dumbass gang. Let's do an email. Got one from, I'm going to split up some quotes and then email, because last week, many listeners pointed out that I did not play Scott Fletcher quotes at the end of that movie, was the Jason X movie. So I'm going to still play those today. What I'm going to do now is sandwich an email between clips for this movie, quotes for this movie, and then quotes for Jason X last week. So here you go. Scott Fletcher, Let It Rip. He's only got two for this one, but this first one's my favorite. It's really just bloopers of Scott Fletcher, but we love those, don't we?
those are my favorite.
Yeah, they're the best. It's about 8 seconds. Check it out.
Orville who promotes prize fights.
I love it. I love that one.
He's just like that in real life, too.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That was not edited.
No.
No.
Not at all. Here's one. Further than your bed. What? Oh, anyway.
I guess I'm not too smart. That's all. Because up to now, I'm the only one dumb enough to want to take you further than your bed.
Where? I want to know where.
The sequel's where.
What's further than your bed?
She came back for the sequel.
The headboard?
She was a thing again.
The side table?
I don't know. I kind of want to watch the sequel now.
Yes.
It's like every time.
Just to tie all that up, right?
I don't mean for film sack. I just mean, I don't know. I don't know why I'm curious about that. I want to see how it holds up or how it continues. Or, I mean, is it kind of a Cannonball Run 2 sort of vibe? Or is it?
Take you further than your bed.
Randy can't get past the.
I'm not going to lose that. It's like when somebody says they live off First Street. I always want to say, yeah, me too. You know, everybody does.
Everyone lives off First Street. Yep.
And except sadly, those who live in streaming. The middle of First Street.
It's not on streaming? Damn.
It's not on streaming. Right, they hook you.
Matter of time, Brian.
Yeah.
Matter of time.
That's how they get you, Brian. Yep.
They hook you.
All right. We got an email from Ben who says, yet another film sack movie that is soon to be remade or reimagined. He is talking about, and I'll play the clip just for funsies.
Django
is being not remade, kind of relaunched.
Yeah.
Quentin Tarantino, who claims that a lot of his inspiration for filmmaking period, and we talked about this on that very episode, comes from Django, the movie we covered on the show. He is making something called Django Unchained.
I love that.
So let's see. Quentin Tarantino has confirmed that, let's see, he has turned the final draft in of a spaghetti western into the Weinstein Company. The movie to be titled Django Unchained will be produced by Stanley Scher from Pulp Fiction and Pilar Savone.
Don't please film it in Italy. Please.
Let's see. He says, I'd like to do a Western, but rather than set it in Texas, have it in slavery times. With that sub. How can you do that, though? Slavery times. I thought those were slavery times.
I was about to say, anytime U.S. slavery? I mean, because there's slavery been throughout the history of time.
I don't know about that. We'll see, though. But he is a free. He's being the title character Django is a freed slave, and under the tutelage of German bounty hunter Christoph Waltz, becomes a badass bounty hunter himself. So this is interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know, dude. I don't know what to do with this.
Well, as long as there's a weird montage of kissing people at the end, I'll be in it.
Boy, you see, sure are seeing a lot of Christoph Waltz since Inglourious Basterds. It's like this guy didn't exist, and then suddenly he's in The Green Hornet. I just saw the trailer for The Three Musketeers. There he is.
Mm-hmm. How's that looking, by the way?
I think it looks great.
I didn't hate the... Well, I kind of did hate the last one. The last one was too funny, like too goofy. I would like a more serious take. You know, I always did like The Man in the Iron Mask, though. I thought that was all right.
Mm-hmm. You know, while we're just running down all the Alexandre Dumas books, the wildly unheralded film, The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
Just so should
have. That was a good movie.
Oh, I love that movie.
Yeah, that was a great movie.
Completely agree. That was fantastic. We watched that recently again. I think I've probably seen that 5 times. Oh, dude.
Oh, Brian. It's James Caviezel as the Count. You got to see it.
He was Jesus in the Mel Gibson Jesus movie.
Yeah, the Passion of Christ.
Yeah, he's also
Mel Gibson Jesus movie.
The original Dumbledore is in there. So before he died,
Richard Harris.
Richard Harris is great in it.
Dude.
And that guy that we were talking about, who I love as a villain, is the prison warden where he's first in the prison there. That guy that ends up getting hucked off the edge. Love that guy. I don't even know. He's in The Crow. Or was you and I a bit talking about it on TMS the other day? It's the guy that was in The Crow, the bad guy in The Crow with all the hair. He's in that, and he's great in it.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, you should totally see it. Guy Pierce.
Guy Pierce, He's from Memento.
Yeah.
And most importantly, Luis Guzman.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Oh, he's great in that.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. In fact, that was maybe the movie I saw where he first mattered to me.
I would like for the four of us to all sit and watch this movie and just not film second. I just want to enjoy
just
it.
Just see it. Yeah.
I love this movie.
Yeah, it's a great movie.
Just
totally.
I just put it at the top of the queue.
It's on streaming now, right? Yeah.
No, Count of Monte Cristo?
Yeah, I thought so. Mm, no.
Nope.
Used to be. Because we saw it there once that way, but I think I own it somewhere too. Well, anyway, great movie. You should see it. Thank you, Ben, for the email. Now we're going to play Fletcher quotes from Jason X. Mm-hmm. Stuff I left off last week. Here's one called 12%. Wait, where is it? There it is.
The statistical probability of survival is 12%.
Yes, Scott Fletcher, it is. Here he is cutting out a swear.
Jason Voorhees, that's what's going on.
I love it when he does those. He does his own bleeps, by the way.
Dunaway, did you get some curse words in real person and in real life?
It's all that comes out of the guy's mouth.
No, I'm kidding. he's raising those daughters. He can't swear anymore.
Yeah,
He does have like 3 or 20 daughters.
Yeah, he's got three, isn't it?
Girls.
He has 3 girls. I think so. They're all just as cute as the next. He's a good little dad. Let's smoke this effer is the last one.
Let's smoke this f***er.
It's literally what I just said, isn't it?
That's awesome, because if somebody goes and cuts that from this show, it's going to sound like you and Scott are saying the same thing.
I know. I just realized as I said it, that was stupid. Just repeated it. Anyway, there you go. Thank you, Scott Fletcher. Sorry I didn't get to play those last week because I was being dumb.
And happy birthday, Scott Fletcher. I know it won't be when this episode is aired, but it is.
It's technically today, the day we're recording this, Scott Fletcher's birthday. Huge shout out to Scott Fletcher, who is both awesome for who he is and also because he is about 3 months younger than, or excuse me, 3 months older than me, which I really like. Mm. I like that a lot when people are older than me and Ibbet for that matter.
Right.
Wait, Ibbet, when's your birthday?
About a month after yours. I'm a little bit younger. I'm about a month younger. August 2nd,
bastard.
1969.
Bastard.
Yep. I will never catch up to you, Scott Johnson. Mm. I will always be younger.
This is our nerd birthday, though, right? This is the big one. This is the the answer to the life in the universe and everything.
That's right. Sure. Yep.
Can't wait for that BS to fall down around me. All right. So there you have it. That's our movie for this week. Next week, we are watching the film They Live.
They do?
I don't know what They Live is, so this is new to me.
Anyone don't know what the movie is?
No.
Oh, well, of course, I have.
I guess I have kind of heard of it. But I don't have any recollection for what I should be expecting.
No, I'm not seeing
everything.
This.
You should expect everything. You should be expecting to chew some bubble gum and to kick some ass.
Really?
And I'm all out of bubble gum.
I'm all out of bubble gum.
1988's John Carpenter's They Live.
I took some crap for saying that John Carpenter makes shit movies.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Well, some of them are pretty good.
I'm going to stick by it, though.
Are you, though? What's your take on The Thing?
I'm going to dig in.
You don't like The Thing? Because I know you don't like the Dracula 2000 or whatever the hell that piece of garbage was. I agree with you there. But
Thing
is pretty good.
It's a question of what we do on this show, and that is we try to look at a film in context and then we rip it out of context. Mm. So ripped out of context, like taken away from the proper time when they were made and released, yeah, his movies are pretty crappy. You know, at the time, though, Thing was great.
Well, this movie has Keith David in it, which I cannot wait for because I love Keith David. Narrator of some of the best Ken Burns documentaries, but also purveyor of some of the worst roles in film history. So I cannot
just
wait for that guy.
Don't mistake him for David Keith. Totally different actor.
Totally different guy. Right. Roddy Piper is in this.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Rowdy
Roddy Piper. Snap into a Slim Jim. Also, let me just give you the plot summary of this.
Let's just do what we're going to do at the beginning of the next episode, right here, right now.
I feel like I kind of am. But here's the plot summary of this. A drifter discovers a pair of sunglasses that allow him to wake up to the fact that aliens have taken over Earth. Could there be a more perfect sounding film for us? I don't think so.
Totally. Nope. I love it.
Is there an orangutan?
No.
Maybe.
Is there a orangutan?
Do they keep singing? Is there a song that goes through the whole movie going, they live, da, 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 they live.
I can only hope so.
Tune in next week to find out.
I can only hope so. So we'll have to wait and see. That's going to do it for this episode. Thank you guys for listening. You can visit the site at filmsack.com. All the episodes are there. All the links to everything you need, like subscriptions on iTunes. And leave us 5-star reviews. We love those as well. You can email us, filmsack@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, twitter.com/filmsack. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/filmsack. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy. We'll see you next time.
Fish slap.
Wow. Except for Rat Boy.
Mm. Rat Boy. Mm-hmm.
Is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.